All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this sort of gloomy Saturday, September 8th, 2018. So hopefully you grab a cup of Joe and join us this morning. Looking forward to today's show. We're going to be talking to a multiple Long Island amateur champion, Alan Specht, who's been sort of certainly a part of the fabric of Long Island golf over the years. So looking forward to talking to him. I wish the BMW was a little more firm and fast, though, just to give you a little leaderboard. Xander Schauffele is trying to be the X factor in the Ryder Cup, although I still think it's Tony Finau's to I think it's his spot, and I don't even know if a win would get him in. It certainly makes it more interesting, but I still think Tony has the edge over Xander Schauffele. But good on him to make himself part of the discussion. I mean, obviously he's done that through his play all year, but the idea of him going out and winning this and making himself a prominent part of the story is pretty impressive, you know, especially this day and age in golf where it's just so difficult to win on tour. He's at minus 13, Justin Rose minus 11, then a foursome at minus 10, including Ricky Fowler coming back from his torn stomach muscle, and Keegan Bradley, a resurgent Keegan Bradley, if you will, part of that foursome, Hideki Matsuyama and Alex Noren as well. All news, obviously, after the first round, Tiger and Rory shooting 62, but neither could back it up, and so go 62-69, 62-70, respectively, and and now still within the top 10, but it's just amazing how quickly you can lose ground on a field in a field like this, and really in any tournament on the PGA Tour when guys are shooting so low. You know, I wish the course was firm and fast. Mother Nature's had her own, has certainly had her say this summer, and it has not changed one bit as the course has turned soft, and these guys are really just reducing a Donald Ross gem into a basically, I don't want to say pitch and putt, but it's pretty close. These guys are just eating it up, as you could see with 62s early in the week, and plenty of them, 65, 64. I mean, it's just the first round was just crazy. So, and then some of them backed it up with more 64s and 65. So I would have loved to have seen, I said it last week, and I'll say it again, the course needs more historically prominent golf courses to play on, but when you play in conditions like this, it doesn't matter where you play. It doesn't, you know, all the architectural soundness of the golf course and the strategy of the golf course is sort of goes by the wayside when guys can just hit driver wedge into every hole. There's no strategy, just bomb it down there. So it's just difficult for these courses to stand up, or any golf course to stand up against a modern PGA player. But it just hurts me when it's on such a historically prominent golf course like Aronimink, and these sort of golden age golf courses get reduced to, you know, we want to appreciate them when we have them, but then when we have them and they're reduced to this, it's kind of really disappointing and just unfortunate for the avid golfer who likes to watch good golf courses and players take on strategy and think about strategy on the golf course as opposed to just bombing it down there and flipping a wedge in there and making a birdie and moving on. So anyway, that's my little ramble for the morning. But we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have Alan Specht. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit Pete'sGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony, and on the line is decorated Long Island amateur champion, Alan Specht. How you doing, Alan?
How's it going, Anthony? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining me this morning. I'm curious.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. You laugh, but I mean, it's no easy feat on any level to win. And, you know, you have a couple of Long Island championships. You got a public links championship, a New York City amateur. I mean, it's not easy to do in one of the most competitive sections in the United States.
Yeah, thanks. I probably win something every 8 years or so, you know.
Is that...
I just show up and
you're the leap. You're the leap.
Battle it out, and then every 8 years I come up and I won this one. Good.
Alan Specht, the leap year winner?
That's right. That's how it is. I still have another, I think, probably 5 or 6 years till maybe I can win something else, because I think I won something a few years ago. But, you know, Anthony, it's funny that you gave me the intro as part of the fabric of Long Island. I think that, you know, I haven't been the best player. I've been a good player, but maybe Joe Saladino has probably been the best amateur.
Right.
You know, you could probably make a case for some other pros, But you made the intro as part of the fabric, and that's kind of really where I feel like I've my makeup here is that I've had like a front row seat to a lot of the interesting action that we have had on Long Island. Some of the really good players, some guys like Keegan Bradley. You just mentioned Keegan Bradley. I got a great Keegan Bradley story. And I've just, I've been able to play against those. So I'm a guy with a job who's played in amateur events, but I've also been, because I've been involved in a competitive golf, I've been able to play against these guys and see them when they were young and see them, you know, like Andrew Swoboda, you know, guys like that. We're watching on TV, and now Andrew just won the three events, the Long Island Open, the State Open, the Met Open. And I was there, you know, when he was a kid, practicing with him, not practicing with him, but playing against him. And it goes back to J.J. Henry, you know, Johnson Wagner. So when you're a competitive amateur golfer, a guy like me, I get to play with a lot of the guys, and you can see the early years.
That's fascinating, and I do want to hear that Keegan Bradley story, but I really want to know, where does this story begin for you? I mean, how did you get started in the game, and who introduced you to it?
It was a baseball guy when I was in junior high school. Good curveball. Didn't have much of a fastball, got knocked around a bit. And then I started to take up golf a little more seriously. My dad played a little bit, a few times a year, and my brothers. And I was not much of never played in a junior tournament. It was kind of a weird story because, you know, I met Mike Hebron over at Smithtown, and he really gave me some of his time. And we studied some film, and I was just a fanatic about it. And I went from, not so good high school player. I don't even think I broke 80 in high school, to ending up with a scholarship at St. John's, Division I. We were the best team in the Northeast. I was one of the, top four players. And I think it was the captain of the team a couple of the years, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of an odd move from, I don't know, maybe I was an 8 handicap, in high school or something like that. And I went to, very quickly, really a good player in college.
Right.
Never good enough to make money as a player, though.
What was it, Mike Hebron? For those of you who know, I mean, everybody sort of knows the Hall of Famer, Mike Hebron. Sort of very brain-based learning approach to teaching golf. He probably wasn't as much as he was back. He is now, back then when you had him. But I was just curious, what was it that he was it the seeing you obviously seem like a very analytical person. So was it seeing yourself on film the first time, or was it something that he said? What was it that sort of where the bug really bit you?
Yeah, it was mostly film work. I guess I first started, I had this little Jack Nicklaus, how-to guide, a little pamphlet.
Yeah.
And I would watch the TV, and I think whatever technology at the time to record the guys, the PGA Tour, and then kind of rerun those swings and look at them. Very different from now, the YouTube, that we have access to all these great swings.
Right.
But back then, Mike just, we broke the swing down, we took a look at it, and we still, mine versus the best players. And it was my first look at, he really taught me a lot back then. And so thanks to him. And I made some very quick improvements. And then, you know, played at St. John's, pretty good golfer, and but not good enough. I'm a good local amateur, but I was never played in a U.S. amateur and some other national events, but not much, not good enough to play on the tour, not good enough to make any money. I feel like I'm kind of, all your listeners, if you're listening to the Radio Golf at 8 a.m., you're probably a pretty hardcore golfer. And we all think the same way. I feel like my best days are ahead of me. I'm still grinding. I've still worn out the mats over the last few years. I just feel like I'm on to something now, and I think my best golf is right in front of me.
I think we all, you know, want to think that. You know, I think that I think that for sure. I actually kind of feel it actually, that I'm hitting the ball better than I'm starting to hit the ball better than I ever have in terms of its efficiency and distance. I mean, it's still a work in progress, as you know. You've seen me, but we'll get to that in a second. But I'm just curious: is there any particular championship or your time? Like, let's say St. John's. What was so special about St. John's? Before we get to your championships, your time spent there. When you look back at it now, what stares back at you the most?
How nervous I was ahead of tournaments, because I never played in the junior tournament. I remember the first fall, you know, we had a good team. We had some guys, some Long Island names you'd recognize, like, you know, Mal Galletta, PJ Callen, Mike Meehan.
Yeah.
A guy named Malcolm Smith, I haven't seen him in a long time, but he was a really good player back then. And, you know, they had all already won Long Island Amateurs before they even played on a college team. And this is so new to me. I remember in the fall, I led at least one, maybe two of the tournaments. I think the one at the Bethpage Black, our host home tournament, shot a low score in the Bethpage Black. And my name was in the paper, and I couldn't believe why. I was so out of sorts. I didn't know what was going on here. I was just, I came from, you know, a guy who was just looking at my golf, you know, pitching the baseball games 2 years ago. And then of course I would follow it up with a hugely, huge score, and I was awful. I couldn't handle it too well, but I remember how nervous I was. Couldn't sleep the night before. I didn't know,
I was doing. It's almost feel like you're having an out-of-body experience, right? The world is just going so fast. And you know, I know it gets played. I know it's oversaid and it's overplayed, but it's really true. I mean, there's as Bobby Jones said, there's regular golf and there's tournament golf, and there's a big there's a big difference. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing in your little men's or women's league, or but when it's a match, when it's part of a larger thing, it's a much bigger deal. And it's only I think, you know, guys who don't or women who don't play in at least one tournament or try to be in a tournament or try and do it, or just they really don't understand. Like, even you and I who have played in tournaments, you obviously on a much higher level, but at least have an appreciation for, like, I'm not saying, let's say maybe not the Ryder Cup, but maybe, you know, some, you know, maybe a major championship. You can at least envision, can imagine, you know, what your nerves were like in St. John's. Now, yeah, you could at least multiply that by 10 and what it must be for coming down the stretch of a major, versus people who have no idea what it's like to even maybe even be nervous on the golf course, because they've always sort of just, you know, just had fun with it, or just, you know, it's just with their friends. So least you get, you mentioned, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the nerves part. And then, like, maybe you might pick up a local paper, look at some scores, stuff like that. Those scores can be tough. It could be tough to shoot that 72 on a course where, you know, this isn't just the Tuesday course, where even on the local level.
Right.
They let the rough grow. You know, they have those little steamrollers. You know, they roll the greens a few times before that. And they put the pins in tough spots. And suddenly those, what used to be easy pars, aren't so easy anymore.
Sure.
And the greens are running at 12 and 13, and some of the courses can't really handle those kinds of speeds. So it's tournament golf is a completely different animal, you know, between the ears and also the setup, the golf course itself.
Yep. Much, much more difficult. Alan, I want to move on to your championships in a minute, but I want to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the tri-state area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family, featuring three different models designed for the better player, to our JPX family, featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorshaw. I'm Anthony, and on the line is Long Island amateur champion Alan Speck. Alan, you, as I mentioned, 2008 champion at Wheatley, 2015 champion at Soho. You're a Publix champion, New York City amateur champion. Out of those, unless I'm missing one, which one is you say the most rewarding to you? I'm sure they all special in their own way, like children and all that kind of. But when you look back at this point, does one any particular have a little more meaning than another?
Definitely. By the way, I think I won a Long Island amateur stroke play thing somewhere along the lines in there.
Okay.
But yeah, the one at Wheatley Hills, my home course.
Okay.
Now, my good buddy Johnny Colleary was my volunteer caddy, and we it was just tons of fun. You know, we were about three down to a young guy, in the first match, and it looked like I was dead. And it was going to be one embarrassing, but then I ended up, and I beat, Joe Saladino in the final. Joe's, like I said, has been our best player.
Yeah.
So I kind of, maybe I rose to the occasion a little bit there, and I made fun of a lot of my friends, and we had a ton of fun with that. Yeah, that was my most memorable for sure. The other one, I guess, at Southward Ho, the Long Island, Long Island amateur match play one is, yeah, that's kind of like my second home course. That's the one we play the Havemeyer there every year.
Yep.
So I played there a million times, and a lot of friends over there too. In fact, my nickname is Dr. Havemeyer because I played there in their tournament so many times that they had to come up with a nickname for me because it was like every round, every time I'd always get into match play, and I always remember the second or third round I'd get into that guy who got really hot, and I ended up losing in a match. Maybe on the far side of the course, I had to walk about a mile back to the golf course. the lonely walk. Poor guy,
Yeah.
I've lost to a lot of good guys. Let me tell you, I've won a couple things, but I've lost to the best of them.
I'm a big fan of Southwood Hall. I played there a whole bunch. And my buddy over there is a member, Craig Brewer. You probably played. I've seen him at the Haven, yeah. At the Havemeyer, and we played there a bunch together over the years. And I love that golf course. And what I think is interesting about that golf course is the routing is so good that the way the wind blows there and the way it swirls, it's a very, you look at the Havemeyer scores and even in general for particularly by modern standards, not a very long golf course. Nobody ever really lights it up there. And I think that's a real testament to the golf course, the way it was built and the way it's maintained.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier when you were speaking about Aronimink about, the kind of taking the strategy out of it.
Right.
Because it's so soft. But Southward Ho, I guess, the Tillinghast, the way the greens are kind of a bowl-shaped greens, and you can't short shot yourself. And you have to work angles, too. Like, you have to, so you really need strategy. Like, maybe some of those par fives come to mind right away where, if you want to hit your third shot close, you have to come in from the right angle. You can't, because of the mounding. And you have to, you can't just kind of just turn your brain off and whack away because you can, you can cost yourself.
Yeah, you got to golf your ball there. And I'm looking forward to, they're going to a master plan now to restore it in some of its even more width. Because you said the greens are so good, the complexes are so good there, that they actually can introduce a little more of its original width, because it won't make a difference to the lower handicapper, because you still have to play the right angle. But it'll sort of be more fun for all handicaps there. Not that it wasn't, but it's just you're going to see a little more width. You're going to see a little more of the original Tillinghast design. Some more joined fairways. They're going to bring back, I believe, Hell's Half Acre there on 10. So it's going to be, it's going to be pretty expansive. It's going to be over a number of years. Obviously, you're not going to just show up one day and see a different golf course. Right. But I'm looking forward to that. It's transformation, because it's always been a golf course. I've always felt, like you said, it's definitely a strategic golf course. But then to bring it back to its original intent and restoration, it's going to be even better, I think.
Yeah, and I ended up, when I did win there, I ended up beating Darren Goldstein. And Darren's been the player of the year for the last,
Three or four years.
But we had a good battle there in the finals. That made it pretty memorable, too.
Well, I want to make sure I get it in, but what was your Keegan Bradley story? St. John's guy.
I have a thousand stories, because I've been around forever, and I've been competing in the events. And remember Wheatley Hills for 20-something years. I left a couple of years ago, but so I played at St. John's. The team practices there on Tuesdays, so I would always, be the alum. I'd go out there, buy them hot dogs, play golf with them. I always got to know the guys over the years. And so Keegan shows up, and I'll never forget the first shot I ever saw him hit. But anyway, so I met him. And then in 2008, so I guess I was 07 in the fall, 08, Frank Darby, the coach, calls me up, tells me Keegan has a couple of credits to finish up in the spring. He has no place to practice and play. So I called the golf team and said, look, there's a skinny guy down there, plays at St. John's, but coming on Tuesdays. Really great guy. Really good player. And let's see if we can help him out. So Johnny, to his credit, mentioned it to the club. We said, okay, Keegan. The story, this post covered it closely, but they said he worked in the bag room. He didn't really work. But we had to kind of figure out a category where he fit into.
right.
So anyway, so I ended up practicing and playing with him every day in 2008. And then my friend Glenn Maraca, Keegan was a little low on funds. Glenn writes him a Q school check, no strings attached. And then Keegan takes that check, goes to the Q school. And at the time, you go to the web.com. They change the rule. You don't go straight to the tour.
Right.
Made it through the finals, got to the web.com, got onto the PGA Tour, PGA Rookie of the Year, blah, blah, blah. And then, because we he didn't forget us either. We cared what nobody else did, and he comes back and plays with us sometimes, and he's been really good in that department. He even mentions Wheatley Hills occasionally, one time after a win. I remember at Bridgestone, as soon as he won, the holing putt, Keegan, nice job. He's like, yeah, I'd like to say hi to my family. I thank the guys at Wheatley Hills
I love it. He had one of those Division I football jobs. Is that what you were telling me before?
Yeah, that's right. By the way, I hate this joke, but so I win the Long Island Amateur. Who's one of the first to say in my gallery? Young Keegan.
Oh,
that was my best year. It was.
That's fantastic.
To him was terrific, because you can hear like the acceleration that his club made through impact, and you try to mimic that. That's the one thing those guys have, is acceleration.
Right.
And so on the range there, so that was, and then watch him on a golf course. He hit shots that I never saw anybody hit, and I didn't know he was going to be this good, but he did things that.
Well, you mentioned it. What was it like with the first time you saw him hit a shot?
Oh, so I gave they're on the 10th tee at Wheatley Hills, a par 3. And I'm in my golf cart, and I wrote, unsolicited, hey, boys, throw the bags on the cart, let's go play. And he hits this 6-iron in the 10th hole. I still remember it like it was yesterday, because I just never saw it. I played a lot of good guys, and I just never heard it sound like that. And he just, I couldn't believe. I also couldn't believe what he did out of really bad lies. Like the ball would be in a par 5, and maybe drive the ball in the rough, and it was really thick rough, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm going to take my 8-iron, I'm just going to fumble it up the fairway and try to, you know. But he would be, and I remember what it was, but where's the pin from 240 yards? I'm like, what do you mean, where's the pin? Right. and he would take his 4-iron, hit it out of an incredibly thick lie, like really grassy lie, right to the pin where he was, you know, it was amazing stuff. He was a little wild at the time. He didn't have the same game. Well, to see, he didn't, wasn't a straight hitter. Right now, he's been maybe the tour's best driver of the ball last, you know, ever since he's been on tour.
Right,
the total driving statistic. But back then, no, he didn't have the accuracy. Now his ball flight is a little bit different too.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I think it's always good that you know, you described him as a good guy. So I'm happy that seems to be sort of back on track again. So I know he kind of had that immediate, well, not immediate success, but he sort of had that little early peak in his career, and now. Went through the little sort of valley, and hopefully he's. It seems like he's on the rise again, and you know, we wish him all the best for sure.
Yeah, very very nice guy, very tough guy.
Yeah,
very. Again, you might sound silly, a golfer's tough, but you pick up these little subtleties. And one thing I know you were short on time, but one thing I knew right away when he got on tour how tough he was when the speed his putts were carrying. Like, he always got the ball to the hole. I think that's why Tiger Woods won so many tournaments at the end, because the other guys, the putts would die at the hole. He can always carry the speed. He just had the guts to get, you know, to get the speed to get the ball to the hole at the right speed.
What has Long Island Golf meant to you? I know it's sort of a big question for not a lot of time, but it just, when you think back, you know, if you sort of assess sort of what you've done and what you've accomplished and what it's meant to you, you know, how do you put that into words?
For me, it's all right, so I've won a few things, I'm not the best player, you know, I'm in that second tier, and I'm not a pro, so it's been a social element to it too. You know, I like to compete. I like to, and I'm that range rat who likes to practice a zillion hours a week, but then I like to play in the tournament, so I want to win the tournament. So that's a big deal. But I also made a bunch of friends out there, and it's just the whole thing works. The sportsmanship that happens within the tournament, I love, and I like the friends that I've made, and we've gotten to play different golf courses. There's not a golf course in the tri-state area I haven't played, I don't think. And so, you know, it's been that's what it's been. I haven't made any money doing it, but it's
to be honest with those relationships, I mean, we, you know, again, we hear it all the time, golf's about the, you know, as much about the people and the friends that you make. I mean, that's really, but that's rich in itself. It doesn't necessarily have to be in monetary a monetary form. I think, like you said, the friends that you made, I mean, listen, to be honest with you, I, you know, if I hadn't, you know, had a radio show, I don't think I would have never met you. Or if I never met, you know, I wouldn't, maybe not have met Mike Darrell. Like, I mean, those things, I mean, the game of golf is sort of, you know, it brings people together, and the friendships that we've made over the years, and, you know, my friendship with Woody Lashin that I really value, you know, those things, you can't put it, you know, I don't want to sound like a MasterCard commercial, but they are priceless to some, you know, in my mind.
They happen pretty fast, too, because you have the golfers, you know, we have something in common where we, you know, especially maybe some of the lower handicap golfers, where you really practice hard. You meet somebody who's a good golfer, you know what he's been through. So we already have this bond.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's how we kind of, because my friends come a little easier out playing out there, because we have that in common, I guess.
Yeah, no, you're right. There is a shared experience. So, you know, I played in a mid-amateur qualifier not long ago, and you sort of, it was just interesting on the range. You know, the guys, you described it perfectly. Guys that are like been there, done that, you know. Guy just walked right up to me. He's like, oh, those, you know, those ping, you know, those new pings. And I was like, yeah, you know, he's just like, you know, just like, it's just pretty interesting, because you're like, they're like sort of, not that I am to any degree, but I was just sort of on the range with a couple of war torn, you know, vets. So they were just, you know, they had the scars, and so there's that sort of, fraternity, I guess, if you will, to it.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, Alan, thank you very much for joining us. We were just about out of time. We'll I'd like to do it again because I think we could have drilled down in a number of different areas, but I really... That's all right. That's all right. That's what it's all about. We're all about celebrating golf on Long Island, and the stories are certainly a big part of that. But I just wanted to thank you for this time this morning, and we'll do it again soon.
That sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. That was Long Island Amateur Champion Alan Specht. Thank you for joining me this morning, folks. We'll catch you next weekend. Have a great weekend.
Views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.